world of thrills, a world of drama, of capes and tights, a world where death is a revolving door. Welcome to the Geek Matrix.
Welcome to the Geek Matrix.
Oh, did the music play?
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, shoot. No, I couldn't hear it.
That's awesome.
All right. I thought when you did the finger, I thought that was like, wait 1 minute, I'll get it.
I know. I was that close.
Well, welcome to the Geek Matrix DC Comics Review Show number 189. Thank you for joining us, everybody. We are live streaming right now on pretty much bloody everything. And you were listening to us on your, what's it called? Podcast.
Something.
Streaming service. Yeah. Forgot that word.
Yeah.
So my name is Rob. As always, I am joined together by my lovely co-host, Brandon.
Hello, everyone.
And Josh.
He called me lovely, and I like it.
Now I'll call you creepy.
Yeah, and I like it.
Oh dear God.
Have you ever heard of a comedian called Flulu?
No.
He's Scandinavian in some way, shape, or form. And God, I watched him on the Taylor Tomlinson show after midnight. They always have comedians come on and take part in it. And I'd never heard of this guy before, but holy Christ, he was the most delightfully awkward human being I have ever seen in my entire life. I strongly suggest you look, you search this guy out.
I'll check it out. At midnight, the original show at midnight.
Yeah.
That was like 10 years ago. That's where I first heard about Kyle Kinane. And then I checked out his stand up. He's now my favorite comedian of all time.
Yeah. There's a lot of good, funny people that pop up on that show.
I just wish I could get After Midnight here. All I'm stuck with is the first episode and a few clips on YouTube.
Oh, that stinks.
Stupid. Unless some Canadian network has it, but I don't have cable anymore, so fuck it. I ain't paying for that shit anymore. Yeah, suffer. That's what I'll do. All right, so we are here to talk about comics, as always, but also we got some news. There's been some news in the past week. In fact, I got to double check my calendar about exactly when this happened in conjunction with our last show. No, it did happen after. So last Friday, we had the unfortunate news hit the global networks.
Don't remind me.
I know.
I like legendary. Forgot for a second because I didn't want to talk about it, but I knew
we were going to talk about it. I'm sorry. I know, but we got to honor the man, the legendary mangaka, Akira Toriyama. Unfortunately passed away last week at the age of 68, he had been working on several projects at the time, including what I imagine, if I remember correctly, was nearing the end of Dragon Ball Super manga, but he obviously never got a chance to finish those, so we'll see where those works go. I know Dragon Ball, in particular, though, has been kind of taken over by Toyotaro, who did a few fan mangas, and then Akira Toriyama was so impressed with his fan work of Dragon Ball that he got in contact with him and said, let me teach you some stuff. And they've been working together on the Dragon Ball Super manga the entire time, to the point that Toriyama's just feeding him story beats, and Toyotaro is just doing the rest. Excuse me. So at least Dragon Ball will still be going on for the foreseeable future, but every other project he was working on right now, we'll have to see where it goes.
Even more bittersweet because the adaptation, I think it might be the new adaptation, I can't remember if they'd done an earlier one, but Sandland, which is another work by Toriyama, was recently announced for getting, or recently had an announcement that it would be getting a I guess like an animated series or something on Hulu. And they, I think like just put out the trailer maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. So really bittersweet about that.
You know what, what's even a little more mm-hmm. bittersweet and at least in my opinion, and also kind of also heartbreaking, is obviously the Dragon Ball community had been reeling with this news for the past week, but then today there was the semi-annual post on the subreddit of somebody posting in an image of the World Tournament arc in Dragon Ball Z anime mm-hmm. when Goku is fighting PyCon, and then you see the crowd of all the people in Afterworld, and in that crowd is a guy that looks suspiciously like Gohan. Like, he's got the Piccolo turban and the face and the hair and everything looks just like Gohan. Everybody like circles it out and says, is this Gohan in the afterlife watching Goku and PyCon? But behind him, you see the little robo dude that Toriyama used as his little post manga self, like his stand in, in afterlife.
Yeah,
also in Afterworld with the halo. I'm just like, oh. You're not even bringing that up. Yeah. Toriyama right now is watching Goku vs. PyCon. Like,
I think it hit for me, not even just because of my own personal, I guess, engagement with Toriyama's works. Cause I never was really super into Dragon Ball. I think I had read more of Dr. Slump. But it was, I think it was particularly hard. Yeah, no, I think it's particularly hard just because his influence within the shonen community is like unparalleled. Pretty much all the popular shonen that came after Dragon Ball in the late 90s and early 2000s are because of Toriyama, because of his influence. So if you've heard me talk about, like, I don't know, Naruto or Bleach on the podcast, those in all likelihood would not exist without Dragon Ball. So that would hit.
Yeah,
really hard. And then there was because I'm also on the fan subreddits for Naruto and One Piece, and their respective creators put out statements because they were kind of, I guess you could say, mentees of Toriyama in a sense. I think Eiichiro Oda, who's the creator of One Piece, was kind of had a closer relationship than Kishimoto, who's the creator of Naruto. But they both put out statements, and you could tell they were just really heartbroken about it.
Interesting timing, because I was reading those statements as you were saying them. They showed up on the article I was reading, and Ichiro Oda said, it's too early, the hole is too big, and that's
I don't think the translation for that was very good, but you can definitely feel the weight of it.
Yeah, well, but I mean, sure, like,
he means the hole in his heart.
And the hole in, like, the
No, community. I think, because there's other parts of the statement that are, like, are kind of awkward, but...
Well, the Cliff's Notes comes across pretty good.
Yeah. that came out pretty, at least that little bit came out okay.
Yeah.
Damn shame. And
I know.
Rest in paradise, Toriyama.
Yeah.
Rest in the afterworld. You've earned it.
But it's also crazy to see, just as a last point, I guess, how many, not just mangaka were coming out to honor and celebrate the life of Toriyama, but comic artists, you know, who are predominant in, I would say, American comics. I think a lot of people from Spain in particular, Spain and Latin America, where Dragon Ball was really popular, just coming out with their own tributes and that sort of thing. And it's really been shocking just to see how much the influence was present there in their work as well.
Arguably I wouldn't even say it's a really big argument, the biggest anime manga
ever. Oh yeah, maybe the best selling, because I think that's still One Piece, but arguably
I would probably say
in terms of like global popularity, I don't think there's any contest like that is probably the de facto. It sucks.
Like it got to the point that, as you mentioned, it was huge in Latin America. South America has such a massive Dragon Ball fan base.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah.
When the Dragon Ball Super anime was airing the first time in Japan, mm-hmm. you could catch streams of it with subtitles all over the world. I was watching it as it was coming out in Japan, so I was watching it subbed. But yeah. then the next day after, I was seeing all these reaction videos of all the awesome moments. And okay, I'm going to watch these reaction moments and like relive those moments. And I came across one that was just a 30-minute long video of this group somewhere in South America. I want to say it was Brazil in a park. And there must have been like 100 people there. And they had this giant inflatable screen and they're projecting the final episode of Dragon Ball Super and everybody was fucking watching and reacting at the same time. This is wild.
No, it's this is crazy.
South America.
Yeah.
Can I be there? Like
I know. Like I would say
that Goku, like even way more than like Laffy from One Piece or maybe nearly anything other than Sailor Moon, Gundam, and Hello Kitty. Goku is just as recognizable, or at least nearly as recognizable as Superman.
Maybe, maybe more so.
We're on the same page.
Yeah.
Honestly. I don't know.
So, I mean, that's huge pop culture influence. Yeah. And then, you know, those creators, they lost somebody directly responsible for inspiring them to do what they did. So,
yeah.
You know, my heart goes out to them too.
Yeah.
The last thing I wanted to bring up that I actually meant to actually say about South America was that Toriyama's death actually led to Mexican cartels calling a ceasefire for a day honor of Toriyama. That's I read that. I keep forgetting to fact check it, but that's what I read. And knowing how big it is in like the Mexico and South America, I'm not even surprised if it is.
I want to believe that's true. I'll definitely have to fact check it first, but that feels like something that I would believe is true, but may not be true. That may be too optimistic.
Like crazier things have happened that the Mexican cartels called a national day of mourning for Akira Toriyama. I would not be surprised.
Yeah.
Especially like people in...
Everybody knows how much drug lords like their cartoons, man.
Well, really, just Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah. People in our generations, I think even more specifically my generation, we grew up with Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z anime being aired. Like, we were kids when that was airing the first time, and like we grew up with that stuff. We watched it. I still remember being on the playground just having debates about who's stronger, Trunks or Gohan.
I'm more of the Shippuden generation, which kind of came after the Dragon Ball craze in the 90s, but obviously that it's literally direct descendant. You could even call it the child that. Like I said, it's you can't get there without Toriyama, without Dragon Ball.
Exactly.
Oh, and Dragon Ball can't run with its arms pointing straight backwards.
But I certainly can.
Goku did that once and he lost the fight.
Look what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, rest in peace, Toriyama. Hope you're chilling with the rest of the greats.
Yeah. Say hi to King Yemma.
Yeah.
And that mahogany desk. Sorry, I had to throw a TFS reference.
I don't think they get separated by genre up there, so say hi to George Perez, too.
Hell yeah. There's a special place in heaven for legendary comic creators.
Agreed.
I want to go
And before I forget, it's episode 189, or Legacy Week. I did some recalculations and found out we are at Legacy Week 4,537. So we were 3 weeks into the future. We are no longer. The
count has
been set right.
Okay. Fair enough. We've gone back in time.
Yep, to set things right.
Exactly. So last two more things I want to bring up. Why do I have a damn pop-up ad? Go away.
Don't know.
McFarlane announced five more figures specifically a JLA wave, the Morrison JLA to be specific. If you are not up to date on figure news or figure collecting at all, you might be interested in this because we are getting a McFarlane version of Hookhand Aquaman, 90s Peter David Aquaman.
Sweet.
Complete with the silver half vest.
I like that.
And Hookhand. I think the figure looks freaking great too. Yeah. We are also getting Electric Blue Superman, which some people might not be so happy about, but I'm really happy about.
I don't hate it. Different. I'm just not excited to get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But those are the two figures of the line that I think I'm most excited to get. Because we follow up then with Batman in the full black costume with the yellow emblem and yellow belt, very reminiscent of the Morrison JLA. But he's missing the spiky shoulders.
You okay there, Brandon?
Oh no, I was just blowing a raspberry because that figure fucking sucks.
I looked at it and I thought it was Michael Keaton Batman.
It's some problems.
I looked at it again today and I saw that.
It is literally just a repaint of the Three Jokers Batman. Like, they didn't even try.
It is
so lazy.
No, they don't try sometimes. Here's a funny thing that I don't know if you guys noticed, but I noticed because I follow the McFarlane subreddit and they point out every little fucking flaw. There's a Bizarro and Bat-Zarro 2-pack you can get, right? Bizarro and Bat-Zarro. Oh. The Bat-Zarro figure, obviously the Bat emblem is upside down because that's Bat-Zarro, but the torso they used was just another Batman torso repainted. And I think it was the Ben Affleck Batman because the outline for the Bat symbol is still there. It's just painted over.
Oh, wow.
So you get the upside down bat symbol, but you can still see the right side up bat symbol, and it looks fucking awkward.
that's just.
I get it for saving money for like different molds and all, but god damn, couldn't you find a different body? Yeah,
it just bothered me because like aside from the color scheme, it doesn't even look anything like the actual Troika era bat costume or JLA era costume.
It would have been a lot nicer if they maybe tried a different bat figure. Yeah. Like I'm not against them reusing models.
I don't mind them using the,
because I get that, but use one that fits it better. At least give us a better cape, the spiky shoulders,
the belt,
been great. The boots. Even though I'm not a fan of the spike shoulders cape, I think that would have been fucking great in a figure. But yeah, like everything else, just like don't just paint it black and call it a day. Yeah.
The sad thing is, I think there is a figure of that suit. It might be from the DC Universe Classics line. And even that one, which I think kind of looks inferior to some of the McFarlane versions of Batman, got the suit right. So I'm like, what are you doing?
I think McFarlane just wants to keep the spiky shouldered cape for his limited edition statues.
But I mean, if you're gonna
ever notice that all of his Batman, all of his Batman statues have that cape. The ones that he specifically designs, or at least the last few of them have. So I don't know if he's just got like a preference. He's like, no, that one's mine. Or
just very late.
But I love how we always talk of, like, even the figure community always talks about the McFarlane figures, like Todd is the one that designs and makes. He just puts his name on it. I don't think he has anything to do with the actual designing process. We're like, Todd, what are you doing?
It's
like,
just the name.
He has nothing to do with this.
There's two Bat figures that he did design recently. I just don't have anything pulled up right now. But the one that
Troika, right? That doesn't look too far off from the one we're getting.
Bruh, no.
But it's still better. It's still better.
Yeah.
It's still way better. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no. He got to a picture faster than I did.
Sorry.
Batman. Oh, see, I don't even remember much about it anyway. But it's the long flowing cape and the spiky shoulders. And he's done like the last three statues of Batman have looked like that with the blue cape and cowl and gauntlets and boots.
Yeah. I don't know if he's done it yet, but he needs to do an Arkham Batman.
Arkham Batman.
I want to say he has. Yeah, like the game.
Oh, I mean, he. I can't, honestly, I can't think of the, I can't say yes 100%, but you would think with so many other ones that he's, I mean, I've got an Arkham Joker right now.
Okay, so he's probably done an Arkham Batman.
Arkham, yeah, Harley's out there. And...
yeah. Like, I in my mind, I can kind of picture, I remember seeing an Arkham Ra's al Ghul.
Yep. But oh, you're right. I remember that too. Now that you said that,
yeah,
I'm saving my money for the Yamaguchi Harley though. I'm not getting the Arkham one.
Oh yeah, yes, that's fair.
It's a lot more money, but it looks so cool.
Well, Yamaguchi and Mafex are fucking wild
most of the time.
The last figure in the line, speaking of phoning it in, is first appearance John Stewart from Green Lantern number 87.
Oh, man.
Has nothing to do with Morrison's JLA. John was not even on the fucking team. John wasn't even a Green Lantern when Superman had that fucking costume.
Like, was he in a wheelchair by that point? Or he might have still been
I think he was in the wheelchair at that time.
I guess they could have given us that, but that would have been kind of like a fuck you. I don't know.
I was convinced we were getting Jim Lee redesigned Kyle.
Yeah.
That would have made sense. Like, sure, but those costumes have weren't at the same time as the other ones. But at least he was in the fucking JLA.
You wouldn't have wanted that figure anyway. I would have bought that in a second. You I don't like this costume.
Well, me, no. I'd take it. It's not my favorite costume, but like I would take
I'll
it.
Take
I,
would it.
Take I wouldn't like this costume. I get what you're saying. The costume still sucks, but I like it.
It's okay. It's okay to be wrong. It's fine. personally,
it's needlessly strappy. It's got too many straps.
I thought we were all on the same page and expected Zoriel to show up.
I'm expecting that in a wave two.
Either Zoriel or
how wave one ended.
Either Zoriel or Connor. That's the one I really want. I need a Connor.
Well, I'm saying Zoriel because everybody would want Connor. So that's true. That's what we would have to wait for.
And I don't know, would Oracle be in good taste or bad taste?
It would be nice to have an Oracle figure.
Fucking A.
I think I would prefer like maybe Huntress or I'm trying to think who else.
Huntress would be good.
Jesus, yes. Because
we just got Wonder Woman. We just got a Wonder Woman, so I wouldn't think they'd do another one right away.
Yeah.
That's why
they could do the Hippolyta Wonder Woman. I don't know.
Yeah.
Rob, you were reading JLA, right? When she briefly
I haven't read all of it, but like I've seen bits of that time.
It's just it has like the skirt and it has kind of like an older looking design, but I wouldn't say no to that either.
No, they need to do a Huntress because the only decent looking Huntress figure that exists out there is $100.
Yeah. No, I would
that's sticker price.
JLA one.
Hell yeah.
So there's your wave two for JLA. You get Zoriel, Connor Hawk, Green Arrow, Huntress and Big Barda.
Big
Barda. Or Orion. I would love an Orion Barda 2-pack. That would be great.
I think they did Orion already. Not JLA Orion, but I think they've done an Orion. But they could do another Orion. Wait,
do Orion and then have Barda be the Build-A-Fig.
Yeah.
Or I was thinking that or Zoriel will be a big Build-A-Figure.
Zoriel is kind of normal size though, ain't he? Barda's bigger than
he's got wings. Oh,
that's true. Yeah. That's true. Well, you know what, McFarlane? As long as you listen to us, we'll let you decide how you put the package together.
Yeah.
Just give us
as long as you give us
the damn package.
Yeah. And speaking of Build-A-Figures, the last figure in the JLA Wave 1 line is Plastic Man.
It's fun.
Which was really fucking cool. Yeah.
Super cool. But
and
also, you
get two heads and two sets of arms.
Yeah. I wish he was like flexible. Is that my asking too much? It wouldn't really be a McFarlane action figure, but like if there was some sort of way that he was bendy, you know, you could stretch his arms out or like, whatever. Even if they like stayed stretched out, you could
move them
into different shapes.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had a DC Direct Plastic Man. Yeah, big hands, and it's right here actually.
Oh, nice. Nice.
It's like 20, 30 years old. The arms are rubber.
Oh, right.
They're stuck in that bent position, but they're rubber. And it had really big hands, but we've since lost the hands. That's the only part that's really flexible, but you could stretch it, you could move it.
I'd see that.
And it made sense.
Right. And I think that we could at least have that. But I'll take Plaz no matter what. However, I just don't know if I want to be – I just don't know if I want to buy three figures. I'm not that into.
I know. Like, I really only wanted Superman and Aquaman right away once I saw Bats and – Green Lantern, but then I saw Plastic Man. I'm like, oh shit. Yeah. I knew, okay, honestly, I knew I was buying John regardless because it's Green Lantern, but I need that Plastic Man. I have to give in and buy a non-Lantern.
I think I'll just wait until Toxic Planet Collectibles has the build-a-fig for sale.
Yeah, that's some.
Yep. I'll be like, here's $40.
Yep. And last thing I have announced today, actually.
Wait, I don't know if you guys even got a chance. Before you get into what I know is going to be quite crazy, I think you're skipping over something very important.
Do the
initials TF mean anything to you? We're not gonna go straight to this big announcement before we talk about that.
Wait, before we get into that, I haven't read it yet, but Josh, have you read Thundercats number 2 yet?
I have not had a chance to.
Whoa.
I will. Am I the only one
that's read Thundercats?
Don't spoil it for me. But I am definitely reading it like after the podcast. I'll be upfront and honest with you guys. I didn't even get to all of the honorables this week. It's been a rough one. Shit. But
hey, it happens.
Yeah.
Well, spoiler alert for Thundercats. Lionel goes, thunder, thunder, thunder.
I mean, maybe. That's not a given.
Yeah, it's most likely. Now, I've been busy reading fucking Lovecraft again.
Ooh. Nice.
Because I got a brand new book early for my birthday from my lovely wife. I've been reading some of the stories.
Yes, that was an excellent choice.
It looks fucking dope. Mm-hmm. Like it's got gold leaf pages, you can see, and the cover is gorgeous.
I think the art is amazing.
Fabric bookmark. The art?
Yeah.
There is no art.
That's not the graphic novel. I thought you got the graphic novel. Are you kidding me?
No, that's just the.
Oh, awesome!
This is an actual fucking book.
Oh wow, that's awesome. I thought you just got a graphic novel of Cthulhu stories. I was like, oh, that's cool.
If there is a Lovecraft graphic novel, I need it.
Yeah, there's a couple.
Oh fuck, I need to get it.
You of them.
Shit, man. I don't think I've
that's
ever
all
seen
I
it.
Thought it was. Sweet, or not all I thought it was, but badass.
Rob, those how do you good, like reading in that format? With the leather bound books.
What? Oh, like that. So I have this one too.
Nice.
This is a paperback, and I'm actually enjoying that one a lot more. Yeah.
It just feels
better.
They have a similar version for it's like the complete Sherlock Holmes. I got that for my birthday a while back. And I liked it, but I honestly kind of preferred reading it in a smaller size just because it was so big and it was kind of awkward to read in bed. Felt like I was going to fall on my face every time.
Honestly, that is really funny because the same time I got that paperback Lovecraft, I got that.
There you go. Oh man.
I haven't had a chance to open that yet because I wanted to get through Lovecraft first, but then I never finished it. So
no, How did the Baskervilles was I thought a pretty easy read considering some of the other kind of I don't know, maybe a little bit harder to understand. Or maybe I'm just dumb. I don't know. Yeah. But I read that one, I was like, oh, I get it this time.
Yeah.
This time. Because I think I read like the first one I read was like the 5 pips or something. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? But I was also like 14, so I probably was not smart enough to understand. I didn't have that high level IQ.
It happens well, to the best of us, right?
Breaking news, Justice Society of America number 11 pre-orders have been canceled for April. Yeah.
But they're probably going to be rescheduled.
And rescheduled for June.
As I suspected.
And number 10 is now coming out in April.
Stop dodging the question. Man. Transformers number 6, speak.
Oh, I definitely read it. I have a question for ooh, you, good sir. Yes. Do you know the song?
I don't know the song. It felt so left out. I saw like comments about it later, and I was like, I don't get it.
Like when that page happened, I saw the onomatopoeia in the background. Oh yeah, you know the song. I just started singing it.
I'm not in the know. Like
Josh
you.
Knows the song.
Oh yeah.
You got the touch. You got the power. God.
Cancel. And the sad thing
I will send you the song.
Like I knew that song.
You actually know the song too, because you've seen Transformers.
I was gonna say, like I knew that song, I just didn't get the reference at first, and I was like, okay, yeah.
Song is just synonymous with Transformers now.
Yeah.
At least I'm assuming that's the song that they meant. And not like the song from the G1 cartoon show, which was Robots in Disguise, More Than Meets, like that song. Because like a lot of cartoons, they had like the big action song at the end for the fight sequence. But like that whole page just screamed, you got the touch.
Yeah, what an issue. No, I think honestly, this one might have been my favorite. I don't know, which is high praise considering the series has been so great so far. But
yeah. I mean, it had everything you want from Transformers. It had Optimus near death. It had awesome robot fights. It had humans dying of their own volition. You had emotional moments.
Several.
You had great action. You had Devastator. Yeah. Like
you have fucking Starscream getting trekked by Devastator and like just lying on the floor.
Which I get you probably don't know, but that is iconic Starscream. That is vintage Starscream moments.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like Starscream was not the huge Decepticon leader he is currently. He was the guy that always wanted to be the Decepticon leader and take over for Megatron. And as much as he always claimed, he was mousy. He was snivelly. Oh, I see. Like he always said, I am loyal to Megatron.
So he's like the sibling.
When Megatron has his back turned to go, at least until I can kill him.
Backstabbing, yes.
Yeah.
And then like almost every episode, if I remember right, at least it became a trope anyway, would end with Megatron like, Starscream, you! And just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, no, it was very satisfying.
You fool, you ruined it again. Yeah.
Well, anyway, Transformers number 6 was great. Everyone should be reading the series. And unfortunately, last issue with Daniel Warren Johnson on art. But despair not.
Damn, really?
Yeah. This is it. Fuck. But despair not. Next issue is going to be Jorge Corona. And he literally just posted preview pages on Instagram, and they're phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm sold.
I can't wait.
That's not too much of a stretch in art style to go from from Johnson to Corona either. I don't think anyway. I'm not saying that they're identical.
I don't know Brandon about that.
I'm waiting for Brandon to say anything before I can.
Yeah,
say
I'm like I don't
after
know
after the last comparison Josh made, I will follow Brandon's lead here.
I can see where you might be coming from, but I don't know. I think in terms of facial construction and staging, they're very different. Like if you were to read Extremity versus The Me You Love in the Dark, which are Dan Warren Johnson and Jorge Corona respectively, it would be like night and day. Which is funny because one book predominantly takes place in the day and the other one during the night. Whoa.
I had a feeling that was going to happen. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not fighting that battle.
But one battle you should fight is reading Transformers number 6 for damn sure. I can agree. Definitely one of the best issues So
I just can't wait to reread.
Basically ending the first
arc. Oh, yeah. No, I can't wait to reread this first arc again.
Brandon, without giving anything away, did you enjoy Thundercats number 2?
It was good. It's oh, the voice crack. It was good. It was good. I think I'm still like more interested in the premise than in the characters, although I think as of now, the one I find the most kind of endearing is probably either Lion-O or Panthro. But that's mostly just because the Lion-O is clearly like the main character. He's getting all the narration and stuff. But it's solid second issue.
I said I would read three, and I plan to. Lion-O and Panthro were always my favorites when I was growing up.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised. I thought it would have been Wile E. Kit and Wile E. Cat.
No, but and when in the original cartoon, they only communicated via whistle. And that was the only way that they could communicate was.
Oh,
yeah, that can probably get grating.
Yeah. While they could have been cool characters and they did do cool things, there wasn't any dialogue to make you get invested.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Makes sense.
It was like Scooby, you know, they whistled and everybody just magically understood everything that they were saying.
Yeah.
Now things have changed.
But no. Scooby.
Well, Scooby just used Scooby speak.
Okay, like he used my bad. Even not Scooby. Last.
No, like R2-D2. Scooby knows English. Scooby speaks better than most people.
Scooby speaks Scooblish.
Scooblish.
There you go.
You're Scooblish.
Well, okay then.
I like Scooblish. Right. But yeah, great fucking issue.
Yes, no.
Damn sad ending.
Oh, I know. Oh my god. I don't want to spoil too much, but like that moment with Sparky, that made me feel something inside.
Oh, god damn it.
Yeah.
Did I make you sad? I feel like I brought down.
I mean, not to spoil anything, but like, you know, guess who's dying?
Well, you can just skip over that part if you don't want to hear any spoilers. I didn't say anything explicit. I could have said he was critically injured.
Right.
I mean, you still haven't said anything. You didn't have to say anything.
I'm sorry.
Look what you did.
Sparky, no. But what was even sadder was Spike at the end.
No.
That's the part that really got me.
Cartoon dog?
When Sparky did what he did.
I'm just kidding. Sorry.
No. I'll be honest with you, the part with Sparky just left me more like fucking confused. Like, why did he think that would work with the Matrix? How did that work with the Matrix? What was the reasoning here? I could have done with just a little bit of just fucking explanation.
My guess is like somehow he just knew it needed a sacrifice, and if he was willing to give his whole body, so be it. But yeah, I don't know how he expected that to work completely, but I guess it did.
And that is your spoiler-free summary, folks.
Yeah. Not exactly spoiler-free, but we tried our best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard. It's really hard.
The evidence is everywhere. Yeah. Oh, God.
And Cliff Trumper is quickly becoming my
favorite
Bumblebee analog. Like, I'm with DWJ now. Fuck
I know. Me. I'm just like, man, forget Bumblebee. I'm here for this Cliff Jumper Carly relationship.
Yeah. He Bumblebee always was a little annoying anyway. Fuck him.
This was his grand plan, just to make everyone hate Bumblebee.
That's what the whole point of the entire series is fuck that guy. I don't even like
Bumble who? Yeah,
that's fucking hilarious.
And honestly, I would laugh so hard if, like, now that the Autobots spoilers have taken back the Ark and they're able to bring all their buddies back, Bumblebee is like the only one that doesn't come back.
Oh no, you're gonna Kyle?
Funny. But it would probably have like some kind of incontinuity explanation, like Bumblebee is damaged beyond repair, and even all the Energon can't fix him.
He's missing a lot more than
spark has moved on.
Yes, it's too late for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man,
it's too late for him. Says I, Daniel Warren Johnson. Yeah. All right. On to the
news here we go.
That came today. Oh, there's even more news.
Oh no,
that I didn't see. Let me open this up.
Oh no.
Let me just do a quick skim.
Sure.
This looks like mostly the same. Actually, okay, so this is actually more information, so I will read off this one. Okay, so South by Southwest.
We've all been waiting for
South by Southwest today had, oddly enough, an X-Men panel for the Marvel Comics X-Men panel, where various people were there, including one Gail Simone, who has been teasing that she'd be writing for X-Men come June. And we got that confirmation, as well as an announcement for the books coming to the X offices in June. This is A New Beginning. It's titled on the info page, starting with The Uncanny X-Men, written by Gail Simone, with art from David Marquez. And then just regular X-Men, written by Jed McKay, with art from Ryan Stegman. And Exceptional X-Men, written by Eve L. Ewing, with art from Carmen Carnero.
Jiminy Christmas.
And we do have a brief description. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a brief description on the three books. X-Men, written by Jed McKay, with art by Ryan Stegman. We'll see Scott Summers going home to Alaska and leading a team using Cerebro to find struggling mutants in need, which is basically, I'm reading this de facto from Bleeding Cool, which is basically the classicest X-Men
concept you've ever done. Very back to basic. Very astonishing X-Men.
Very back to basic. Yeah. The team that's on the art, because they have a splash page art of the three different teams going off in different directions. It kind of splits here, so I'm unsure about where the team cuts between X-Men and Uncanny X-Men. But we do see Cyclops, Beast, Magic, Kid Omega. I think that's Betsy Braddock next to Cyclops. What looks like Juggernaut behind her, and in the back is Magneto wearing a purple suit. Like an actual, like, tailored suit.
Yeah, and it's sitting in, like, wild. A throne.
Yeah. Also, the character that I remember from Wolverine and the X-Men had the fire and ice powers. I don't remember her name. But she is there as well. Mm-hmm. However, in the page that's cropped, she's also in the Uncanny X-Men group. So it's really... I don't know. She might just be on the Uncanny X-Men team. Which is written by Gail Simone with art from David Marquez, finding Gambit, returning to Louisiana with Rogue, who will find four new mutant outliers. This will see them all become outlaw heroes, in quotations, in New Orleans. Gail Simone says the new mutants in this book were inspired by the way fans have connected with X-Men for decades by feeling different and outcast. And yes, Wolverine is back in the yellow. So we do have Wolverine, Gambit, Rogue, Jubilee, Nightcrawler, and potentially the character whose name I forget. Do you remember her name, Brandon?
Which one? Which team are you looking at?
The Uncanny X-Men team. The one she was in, she debuted in Wolverine in the X-Men back when he was running the school. She had the ice on one hand, fire on the other.
Yeah, I can't remember her name off the top of my head.
Can't remember her name.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was one of my favorites of those of that class. It was really cool.
Yeah. I might be thinking of someone else from Generation Hope, though, so I just gotta double check my name.
Fair enough. And finally, Exceptional X-Men, which I mentioned is written by Eve Ewing with art from Carmen Carnero, is set in Chicago and follows Kate Pryde as she tries to leave her mutant past behind. She will try to be a barista, Okay. But it will be her group of fleeing mutants without guidance, Bronze, Axo, and Melee, who will put her back in as a teacher. And Emma Frost is involved in all of that as well.
Well, no surprise, E-viewing is the book set in Chicago. That's not so much an in-joke as a reference to the fact that she's from Chicago and taught at UChicago.
That's fair.
But, yeah.
But we also, you might not have seen this. There's also an additional announcement. So that's the three ongoing main X-Men comics, but then there's six additional new titles.
Oh.
Yeah. Of X-Men?
Let me see.
There's nine X-Men books. Yeah.
Come on, I get strong.
You won't necessarily need to read them all to understand the X-Men story. Because, for example, one of them is Wolverine, who typically does his own thing in his own book. Mostly unrelated from X-Men. Another one is Storm, who's getting her own title, which I think might be the first time, if not second.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then we have Nyx NYX, which sounds familiar. Yeah. Brandon, you might know a bit more than I would.
Yes, there was an NYX title. I think it was oh my god, who did that? I can't remember who did the original NYX. It was like the book that first introduced X2? No, not X2. Who am I thinking of? Laura Kinney, before she was
X13. Oh, X23.
X23. X2. What am I talking about?
You're stuck on Arnold.
Yeah. I don't remember that one. All I remember is the sequel to NYX, which was like Marjorie Liu basically taking over the characters. It was basically like mutant runaways or something living in New York or something.
Right. So that's coming back. And then we have X-Force, X-Factor, and finally Phoenix.
Just Phoenix.
Phoenix, that's it.
Interesting.
Which is very interesting, yeah. At least it's interesting, very interesting to me because I haven't read X-Men in like 10 years. So I have no idea what's going on with that right now. People that are currently reading X-Men, such as Brandon and Nathan, might have a bit more to say about it have a bit more.
Nathan is probably much more up to date than I am. I kind of dropped off the X-Books a while ago. But I don't know how to feel about this because like Krakoa was so ambitious and forward thinking in a lot of ways that a back to basics approach feels kind of like the safe play. So I'm worried that after about a year of energy, this is just going to fade out again. Like it needs something that's, I don't know, a little bit more to offer than just like, oh, we're going back to the familiar model of, you know, we're saving mutants in trouble and the mansion and Cerebro and like all the stuff that you know that at this point people have kind of acknowledged can be a little passe. So I don't know. And it's not like they haven't tried this before, because after Grant Morrison finished their tenure on New X-Men, they literally did the exact same thing with Astonishing X-Men, which kind of became the de facto book. And that was like, we're putting on the costumes again and we're going to be heroes again. People liked that, but then, you know, flash forward 3 years and the X-Men continuity was a mess after Messiah Complex. So I don't know. It's too early to tell. I like the creative teams. They're coming very strong, hot artists, certainly great writers, but I'm just a little worried about the sustainability of something like this.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, we'll have
one way to find out.
Yeah.
Like, I get what you're saying, because what drew me into X-Men 10 years ago after not really reading it much at all, when Bendis was doing it, was Wolverine and the X-Men. And I love that concept of Wolverine is now not only the headmaster of the school, but he's running the entire fucking organization. Xavier's gone, somewhere unknown. Cyclops is out after Schism.
Was he dead at that point? Was this post-AVX?
He wasn't dead yet. No, it wasn't post-AVX. Okay. Yeah. He had gone away somewhere. And right, that was why AVX was such a big reveal, because, oh my God, like, Xavier's back. He's the only man that can bring Cyclops back from the edge of oblivion. And he fucking
did. That didn't work.
I loved that concept. You had Wolverine running the school and trying to be a fucking teacher to all these interesting new mutants like Kid Omega, who Quentin Quire is still one of my all-time favorite X-Men.
Yeah.
And then you had Cyclops basically on the run and running his uncanny X-Men from a fucking mountain.
Well, actually, I think was this is was Wolverine and the X-Men, that was like post-Schism, right?
That's why they separated.
Yeah, so that would have been, because that would have still been early into the Utopias. Well, not early, but like at this point, they were still on Utopia. Because this is actually, this is like the same time that Kieran Gillen takes over and relaunches X-Men. And that's a really good run before it was unfortunately canceled to give Bendis reins to the fucking Uncanny series. But we're not going to get into that. But the point is, I think it like started in an interesting way where it's like, okay, Cyclops' team is on Utopia. They're like off the coast of San Francisco. And they're basically going to be like our extermination team because they have the power of 10 atom bombs or something. Meanwhile, touchy-feely Logan is running the school because he saw some mutant kids die and he got sad. I'm trivializing it, but that's basically the plot of Schism.
Basically,
like mutant kids died and he got sad, so he's like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't know. I understand why they're going this way. I think the problem with the Krakoa stuff is it just got too out of hand, especially after Hickman left the line. But I don't know. We'll see. Because like I still have memories of the last time they tried to go back to basics with Uncanny X-Men, and that lasted like 20 issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see for sure. I hope it's good. Like you said, the creative team is solid, but we'll have to see. Hopefully the stories are also solid. Yeah. I know it's gotten me excited. Like, I regret not reading X-Men when Hickman was doing it because of how it turned out. Like, it's become literally critically acclaimed at this point.
Yeah.
And that was
I don't know if you actually ever read House of X and Powers of 10, but you could read nothing else from the Krakoa line and you would be fine, because that book by itself is incredible.
Fair enough. I might still check that out, because I know you and Kirk rave
about it. Oh my God. Let me tell you, when that came out, this was like tail end of high school, and I think DC was in the middle of the Year of the Villain stuff, and like this book just came out of nowhere and upended everything, and my axis completely shifted to the point where it was like I was pretty much just reading Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like that was my book to look forward to every week, and then everything else was like, who gives a shit?
Who gives a shit?
And then from what I understand, things changed and got better, got worse, got better, got worse.
Yeah. I still hold that it was going strong up until Ten of Swords, and then after that it was like, what the fuck is going on? But I'm sure some people will disagree. But anyway, there you go. There's your big X relaunch for 2024.
Yeah, this is definitely, I think, the year of the X-Men. We got the relaunch in the comic. We got X-Men 97 is back.
Yeah,
Deadpool and Wolverine are coming back to the big screen together. Like, this is, it's gonna be an X-Men year.
I think that's what they're banking on. We'll have to see if that holds true.
Yeah.
Which could be the entire motivation for a back to basics.
Unfortunately. Yeah,
could be.
Unfortunately. Yep. Talking about a movie tie-in. Yeah, if it gets too weird, you can always do corporate synergy. That also not really.
Yeah, also not really.
Yeah.
All right. Is that the end of the news there, Rob?
That's the end of the news that I've got for now.
All right, well then I guess we will carry on with the show. Sound good? Before before we jump into some reviews, let me just mention the honorable mentions. That's Wesley Dodds, Sandman number 6, Red Hood, The Hill number 2, Speed Force number 5, Fables number 162, and Batman Dylan Dog number 1. And those are all the honorables worth mentioning.
For that.
What?
I said, right on. Thank you for that.
Oh, hey, no problem. It's what I'm here for.
All right, so we're going to start off with Sinister Sons, number 2. I was debating if we could include this, but we'd only have 5 books without it, so I figured why not.
I mean, yeah, might as well.
Yeah. oh, excuse me. Sorry, my throat still gets like phlegmy after the strep throat I had a week or two ago. Fucking annoying.
Take it easy.
Yeah. All right, so Sinister Sons number 2. This is written by Peter J. Tomasi with art from Vasco Georgiev and David LaFuente, colors from Tamara Bonvillain, and letters from Rob Lee. With the cover from Brad Walker, Andrew Hennessy, and Brad Anderson. And it is actually pretty fucking cool.
It is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
You can see it right there. It's beautiful. Pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. Right on. All right, so we pick up where we left off last issue. Sin Sun has taken Lor Zod's spaceship, and Lor Zod has caught up to it with the super speed and tries to stop the ship. But before Lor Zod can get back in, Sin Sun is able to reprogram the voice control so it only responds to him. Then Lor Zod is able to enter the ship as it takes off into space, and him and Sin Sun enter into a quick fist fight. Which Lor Zod quickly gets the upper hand on, seeing as he's Kryptonian, and Sin Sun just has like electrical gauntlets on his fists. So they don't really fucking do much. I don't know. Like, I hope he gets
they do yellow energy. Lor Zod.
A little bit, yeah, but Lor Zod definitely gets the upper hand. And as Lor Zod tries to take control of the ship again, he finds that the voice commands do not work, and Sin Sun reveals that obviously it's not going to work for him. So they go back and forth about this, and they try to negotiate, or at least Sin Sun tries to negotiate, just take me to Korugar and you can have your ship back. But this is when they are swallowed by a space whale. Sin Sun tries to get the ship out of their maximum thrusters, but is not able to get out in time as the space whale bites down. And as Lor Zod is trying to use his abilities to maybe cause some heartburn to the whale, he finds his abilities disappear. As his exposure to yellow sunlight is basically gone at this point.
Yeah. Kind of burned up his batteries.
Exactly. So now Sin Sun has a plan that maybe stumbling over my words. He's going to keep ramming the whale into the teeth, hoping it will maybe pop out before it swallows us, but then it swallows them right away. They end up in the belly of the beast, so to speak, and are found by a mysterious man in a spacesuit with what appears to be a really big laser gun. And that's where the issue ends for now. I'm hoping that's Captain Comet. I'm going to be honest with you right now.
Could be.
It would be fun. Would be really fun. Yeah, I wouldn't put it past it for Tomasi. Excuse me, because I don't know who else could be, but I know I'm excited. I'm interested in the reveal. I'm still enjoying the series. It was a very quick issue. You got to meet you got to see the meeting of the mind, so to speak, of the two boys. Not much has really happened in comparison to the entire run so far for two whole issues. It feels like you've only had 3/4 of an issue worth of content, but I'm still digging it. Like, I like these characters. I like the idea. I'm just hoping we get some more substance out of this soon. It looks like we might just get that in issue 3. We'll have to see. especially if they're going to have this pair become somewhat of an evil team. We'll have to see where it goes. I think this is only supposed to be 6 issues, so.
Is it?
Yes.
I think. I could be wrong.
I have no idea. I just wasn't sure.
Hoping it's him. Who is that?
Ultra, the multi-alien.
Oh, man. Yes.
I know that it would be, but that would just make me laugh, and it would be fitting with the comedic tone of the series.
Yeah. That'd be wild. This issue I will give a 8 out of 10. An 8 out of 10 for sure.
8 out of 10? What about you, Brian?
Hey, same for me. 8 out of 10. It's fun. It's nice seeing Lore and Korg have their kind of slightly antagonistic banter. That for me was like, because I know, like you said, not a lot is happening, but obviously the kind of, I guess, sell of the series is seeing the relationship between Sin-Sun and, you know, the son of Zod. So I don't know. Like, I found those moments where it's like they're bickering and he's trying to get the ship to listen to him and it's not listening. Like, that was fun. And I had a good time. And the art was good. So I'm just, I don't know. I guess I'm just along for the ride. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's see where this ends up. Let's see what weird, wild adventures they get into.
Well, I didn't hate it either. the art is probably at fault here, but I feel like this series all plotted out might work like as a series pilot or maybe even a movie better, because it would be able to, you could digest it all at one time. I'm thinking maybe it's the art here, because I could totally see this art being used in a movie of these guys. As far as the story goes and the issue in general, it's okay. I don't mind reading it. It's a fun book. It's not something that I look forward to. You know, like, I don't remember that Sinister Sons is coming out every month, but it's here. I'll read it and I'll have a good time. I don't have any complaints about it. 7 out of 10.
Right on. And, so one thing they didn't do that I'm hoping they do soon is go outside into space.
Right. You think that they'll pull that off?
Yeah. Then this is horrible. Then we can call them outsiders.
Then you can call them outsiders. Hey, it works.
And speaking of outsiders,
if you say so.
All right. Outsiders number 5, as summarized by me, but written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, with art from Robert Carey. Colors from Valentina Tadeo and letters from Tom Napolitano. The Outsiders make their way to, I guess, the hottest gathering of the year, which is a monster party. Certainly the talk of the town.
It's the monster after
match. Yeah, literally.
That's what I kept on putting it and calling it in my head.
And after Luke starts preparing for a brawl, he is humbled by the Upside Down Man and forced to submit. So following this, the trio basically split up into their own respective missions. Kate follows Nocturna and discovers that not only has Nocturna given birth to a child, crazy, but this child, ominously called the End, will usher in a dark age of malevolence and truth, where humans will finally accept the truth about their monstrous brethren and embrace their dark side. I wrote that and I was like, this sounds like the weirdest shit, but whatever.
Right? I mean, she's got a baby. She names it the End and says,
it was just a lot. It was a lot.
And bring about the end of humanity and all living things on Earth. Like, thanks. No pressure or anything.
Slow down. Let me process one of these things at a time. Damn. Meanwhile,
he's going to have anxiety by the time he's 3.
Jesus, yeah, especially with a name like the End. Imagine going to class. Ugh. Luke saves a little girl whom he believes is in trouble. All the while, he sees other people in danger throughout the party, but focuses only on saving this girl. As he brings her to safety, however, he soon learns that the girl was no innocent human, but it was Clarion the Witch Boy, a character I think some people like. who decides to play a little game with Luke to put him in his place. Do you like Clarion?
I do.
Oh,
of course, and his cat.
Yeah, I'm digging on Clarion too. I think Clarion's interesting.
I do, and I have this strong feeling that this is far from the last time that we have seen of him.
I doubt it. When Clarion pops up, he's bound to pop up again.
Because he's a dick like that.
Yeah. Drummer, meanwhile, is looking for information. After interrogating a number of monsters and strange creatures, she finds the person she's looking for and asks how to get to the place between. Drummer offers a deal to the monster in which she'll kill anyone the creature desires, and the creature accepts. Though the method of getting to the place between is not revealed, Drummer ends up killing the creature. Not really honoring their deal. I don't know if killing him was part of their deal. Doesn't really specify, but there you go. While Kate and Luke leave the party in somewhat irritated spirits, Drummer reveals she was successful in getting what they needed. Kate, like us, is still in the dark on what that is, as the Drummer and Luke offer different answers as to what their motivations are. But she decides to take a little detour before heading back to the carrier to do what she does best, hunt. What did you guys think of Outsiders number 5?
Oh, you're not going to give us your opinion first?
I can. I don't know. I didn't want to hog all the airtime.
I think that shit with Nocturna is interesting. I think Clarion showing up is always the beginning of a giant shitstorm. And that's got me interested.
I say usually because it's like either it can be fucking crazy or it can literally just be like, oh, Clarion shows up and now he's on a date with Stephanie Brown. That's literally an issue of Batgirl, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. I can send you the cover. It's very
funny. I'm aware, but I just thanks for me letting me bring up that I like somebody that's like a C-list character. And you're like, oh, yeah, but they were in a date issue.
that's like the only thing I can think of outside of Seven Soldiers of Victory.
That's hilarious.
So the end is cool. Clarion is cool. I also like getting a little deeper into Batwoman. I think that's something that I can appreciate. We could use more of, like, the description of her being able to taste her mother's hot blood, kind of correlate into when she was a vampire. Basically admitting she's a monster at heart that does love the hunt. I mean, with all that, and I love the story. A lot of stuff is foreshadowing for more to come. Certainly more Nocturna, more than likely more Clarion. And, I mean, we got to see the upside down, the upside down man. Just like long time, no see, just chilling with the rest of the Creepy Peeps Incorporated. I liked every part of this. And Creepy Peeps Incorporated should have got a better laugh. The artwork was really good in it, and it's not just good. The artwork is cool, too. I got to give it a solid 8.5 out of 10, man.
Nice.
I agree with an 8.5. It was a very interesting issue. Really, really cool to see, like, the monsters all getting together at a bar. Also a little disturbing. A
graveyard smash.
Exactly. Shout out to that Batgirl issue you just posted, Brandon, written by Brian Q. Miller. I like that.
Yeah.
He wrote all of Smallville season 11 and it was awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even know that. No.
So I might just have to read that issue because
gotta read this whole Josh, series of Batgirl is it's beautiful. Solid.
Did Miller write the whole run?
He did, yeah.
Oh, okay. I definitely have to check it out.
Oh, yeah. So good.
Because myself, unlike Josh, I do enjoy a good date issue. So I'll definitely start with issue 18.
There's a lot of fun one and done issues in this series.
Right on.
Like Brandon always says, everybody's allowed to be wrong.
I am not wrong. I'm 100% right, and the internet agrees with me. So,
oh yeah, there you go. There's a good check yourself. The internet said so. Yeah. That's definitely a way to find out if you're valid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Excellent.
For Outsiders, though, definitely a good issue. Nocturna stuff. I might have been a bit lost on because I didn't know Nocturna and Kate had. Like a history. Because I didn't read a lot of Batwoman.
Batwoman got turned into a vampire.
Rebirth series, I think.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay. I might have to check out some Batwoman then. How is she not a vampire?
Comics.
Is Jubilee still a vampire?
No.
No. She got devamped a while ago.
How the fuck do you get devamped?
Quentin Quire, baby.
What?
Yes, okay. I'm not even good.
I'm gonna stop asking because this is just raising more questions. I'm
not even good.
Okay.
Disinfectant and a little bit of sunshine and some horse
Phoenix. Armor. I think you mean some Phoenix. Some Phoenix power.
Yeah. Phoenix.
There you go.
Oh yeah, I forgot he had the Phoenix for a bit.
Mm.
Huh. Well then.
Lots and lots of action going on in the book. Well, not really lots of action going in the book, just my mouse died. That's wonderful.
If you're transitioning, I don't know if Brandon gave his score yet.
No, you didn't want to hear me talk about it.
No, that's what you get for not bringing it up first.
But 8.5 for me. Fun issue. Art was fantastic. Story was cool. I'm still digging this series. Take it away, Brandon.
No, 8.25 out of me. Definitely a fun issue. I love a good mix and mingle issue where they're interacting with various different characters throughout this little party they have going on. I don't really have too much more to add that you guys didn't already touch on, save for one maybe a little bit obscure planetary reference that might have gone unnoticed, but was one I caught almost immediately, which is the drummer says something to the effect of when she's talking to that preacher and is about to make the deal and says something like, "You are the survivor. You're like one of the survivors. You're actually one of the last 196,833 or something like that." And my brain lit up and I was like, "Oh my God, are you referring to, for those who are not in the know, 196,833 describes, I think, the different dimensions that comprise the snowflake design of the original Wildstorm universe. You can look it up. It's on the Wikipedia. But that number was just very precise. And there's some kind of mathematical explanation for it. I'm not smart enough to understand it nor explain it, but it's a number that has significance if you are kind of aware of the original Wildstorm multiverse.
Damn deep cut.
Voila. Yeah, no. But it's one, it's like if you know that book, you'll see that and you'll be like, I know. I got it. I understood that reference.
I had a feeling it was, but I definitely didn't understand it.
Mm.
It just seemed to be brought up very specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's all I got.
Right on. So as Josh was saying, this issue had a lot of action.
Well, at least foreshadows a whole bunch of it to come.
Yeah. Also, it was a comic.
And it was a comic.
Yeah.
Like action in comics. Oh my God, Action Comics, number 1073. Written by Jason Aaron. Art Inside and Out by John Timms with Rex Locus Colors. And letters from Dave Sharp. So it's the end of the Bizarro arc, and all the wrap-up starts with Superman teamed up with Bizarro Joker, who is sane Joker. Isn't that bizarre? Who, yeah, at times still seems a little crazy. But through it, we see Supes fight and have control of his mind from evil Bizarro, which leads to him having a fist fight with himself in the middle of Metropolis. Bizarro ends up winning, killing Superman about 100 times, give or take, meaning his mind, I think, but it's visually represented otherwise. Anyway, Bizarro gets control of Superman until Joker starts talking about all these different hopeful things and opening up and sharing his heart. And Superman is able to use that and pull himself out. He was able to see into Bizarro's mind after Bizarro was connected to his. And he could see the magic spell and how to undo it. So he does. Everything goes back to normal, and no one remembers anything at all but Clark. Well, not all the way back to normal. He still hears B Bizarro in his head from time to time, and he sees the reflection of Bizarro when he's looking into the glass. But other than that, I'm actually assuming that's only to represent a little Bizarro being left behind in Superman. But I guess that means that there is no Bizarro now, or shouldn't be, except for the sliver that's left in Clark.
And I think that's right. Apparently running around in the Suicide Squad, but I guess we'll get to that later.
Yeah, gotta love that. Anyway, overall, the story was really enjoyable, even if I'm honestly not into Superman being able to see the threads of magic and untie them. I mean, that's something that only a powerful magician should be able to do. I get that the Bizarro was magic and he was infused and he was using that part of Bizarro, but maybe there could have been something better than that. In any case, the whole thing as a whole, it was a fun time to read. I liked the whole arc, this issue as well. Art and colors are just perfect. I had a great time throughout the whole thing. It was really done well, and I'm depressed that now I've got to move on to the next chapter. 8.5 out of 10.
Well, this is a Bizarro issue, and you say you're depressed, so doesn't that mean you're happy?
Yeah. No, me, I am happy.
I think what you really mean to say is you're very excited for the future of Action Comics within the coming months.
Me, I'm very happy. Me, I'm so excited. Me can barely let go of it.
There we go.
See, you knew you were happy.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. For me, I'm just wondering what the hell the Joker had to say that was so profound it literally brought Bizarro to his feet. I know he was supposed to be like ridiculously sane at this point, but they're going on in the descriptions like he said all these beautiful, wonderful things, and Bizarro was like crouching to his knees, and I'm like, what did you say? What could you possibly said that was that beautiful? I guess we'll never know. But no, this issue was great. 8.75 out of 10. Great art.
Soliloquy that only the Joker could have woken.
I guess, but only a super sane Joker. Like a Joker that embraces sanity and logic and, I don't know, like peace, I guess.
Right?
He recited word for word the scene, the script for the scene in Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice when when Martha is in danger.
No.
And Clark says to Bruce, save Martha.
No.
And that's what brought Bizarro to his knees.
Oh, God.
Following it up immediately by reading in slam poetry style the lyrics to No Rain from Blind Melon. That's
in this issue. Bizarro was played by me, Brandon Chandler, and you can see my real reaction to having to listen to both of those things ever again on the page. Anyway, no, issue was great. 8.75 out of 10. Great art, like Josh said. Cool wrap up. And unlike him, I am very unhappy with the future of Action Comics, but in Bizarro speak.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Like I said, if we're talking Bizarro speak, me am very happy. Me am so excited that I can barely let go of it. All right. So I guess that's it. We're all out of books on the main show.
Yeah, I agree with Brandon.
Rob, did you give your score in review?
No,
probably not. If there's awkward silences, I assume that we're waiting on me.
No. Josh just doesn't love us today. He just wants to.
I was waiting to see if you guys were done.
Oh no, be more rude.
I'll try. It's really hard for me. But yeah, no, really short. I 100% agree with everything Brandon said. I really don't have anything else to add. it was solid arc, little one arc story for Jason Aaron. I wouldn't mind seeing more Jason Aaron Action Comic stories. I will be honest, yes. Like this was quite good. 8.75 out of 10.
I'd be interested in seeing what a Jason Aaron Titans book would look like.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I read enough of Jason Aaron's Avengers.
I was about to say, I was like, I don't know about that.
Titans are a totally different set of characters from the Avengers.
But it's
the team books thing. You have to be a certain kind of writer to pull off a team book, and I don't
know
if you can do that.
Yeah, that's definitely the vibe I got from the little bit of Jason Aaron's Avengers I read.
Oh, dude. I don't know how much you read, but yeah, it
went crazy. Not much. Oh, like one, maybe two issues.
Oh, man. Yeah, I remember when Kirk and I were talking about that book, and it was like miserable. Oh,
Jesus. Okay, never mind. I take it back.
Yeah.
Like, I think that book was so bad, it just completely soured Kirk's opinion of Jason Aaron forever. See, but Jason, it could be other Aaron stuff too.
Flash, what do you think about Jason Aaron doing a Max Mercury story?
Maybe
Max Mercury / Bart story that we want.
I don't want anyone else to do that book but Jeremy Adams.
Yeah, I was gonna say, but I would like to see Jeremy Adams do that book.
If he ever stops or slows down.
Actually,
he's too busy giving me everything I want in comics before I know it.
Actually, I don't know. This one just came to mind, but because I know, I forget if we were talking about this earlier, but I know like some of us had thrown around, it might have been you, Rob, were throwing around the idea that after the, I don't know if it was the World Without Justice League thing, or maybe it was the Lazarus Planet short stories, that Dan Waters should do Martian Manhunter. But honestly, I wouldn't be against Jason Aaron doing Martian Manhunter. I feel like that would be
a good idea.
That'd be cool.
I was just kind of thinking about it. I was like, I don't even really have an idea of what that would be, but, you know, it could be something.
Give him room to be a little different. It would have to be a lot better than the last go-around he had.
Last go-around Jason Aaron had, or last go-around
Martian Manhunter had?
Oh, okay.
When was the last time Martian Manhunter had a series? Was it Steve Orlando?
It was the one drawn by Riley Rosmo. I don't remember who wrote it.
Yeah,
it was when he was Martian Bean Hunter.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Or wait a minute. Oh, shit. I can't. No, I don't want to say this because, like, that's like kind of a team book. But hear me out. What about Green Lantern Corps? I don't know. I don't know. I was like, I'm scared to say that because, like, that is kind of a team book, but it could be a smaller team. So I don't know. Maybe it could work.
Well, it is going to be a smaller team, but we haven't gotten there yet.
I mean, so Green Lantern Corps is kind of an anomaly where it is technically a team book and every character has their own personality, but at the same time, every character is the same fucking character because they're all Green Lantern. Right? They all do the same thing. They just have different ways about it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That would make it a little easier to write as a team book as well.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get too far into Green Lantern, because,
how does that not happen?
Maybe we should move on and wrap up this show. Y'all can hear about Green Lantern in the bonus show.
Hell yeah.
Which means this, I'm going to go first. My top three, it was really, really close. It was so hard to choose between second and third. Outsiders number 5 and Action Comics 1063. But I think since Action is the wrap up of an arc rather than planting seeds for more down the line, I will do it like that. Outsiders number 5 and third. Action Comics 1063 in second, and by far, there is no valid argument against it. First place must go to Green Lantern number 9.
Interesting.
Period.
My top three is the exact same, I'll tell you right now.
Mine is very similar, save for the first pick.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah. Do tell. Oh, wait, I forgot to go ahead. I forgot to give my favorite moment.
No, sorry. At number 3, I have Outsiders. Number 2, Action Comics 1063. But number 1, I actually gave to Batman and Robin, number 7.
Well, really?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, not everybody can be right all the time.
I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. Good sir.
I will say, Batman Robin number 7 was a very close third for me.
I don't know about you guys sometimes. Anyway, my favorite moment was it was an Outsider's Kate to Nocturna. It was Kate says, "Why is everybody bowing to you, Nat? Because this is a trap. I have a 50-mile long interdimensional starship prepared to land right in the middle of your space-time coordinates and really ruin your day."
Which I feel like has to be a very tongue-in-cheek reference to, I think it's issue 4 of The Authority, where they literally park the carrier right on top of, or sorry, not issue 4. I think it's like issue 8 or something, where they go to Sliding Albion and they literally park the carrier. They drive it like right into the palace in Italy and just destroy it completely.
Oh my oops. But yeah, I think you might be right there. Fucking loved it though. That made me laugh so hard. All right, how about you guys?
My favorite moment, Sinister Sons number 2, where they come across the giant fucking space whale, because that was pretty fucking cool to see. Not going to lie. I was excited.
The guy in the helmet's going to be some space pirate named Job.
ooh, space cabbie.
Space cabbie.
Where's his cab? Oh, I guess maybe it got swallowed by the whale.
Or Lobo stole it.
Yeah, or that.
That's always a possibility.
Yeah.
God, I need my Lobo so bad. That's so bad.
Next month, Green Lantern number 10.
No, I meant my action figure, but yeah. I'll take that too.
Yeah. Sorry, Brandon, favorite moment.
My favorite moment is in a book we have not talked about yet, but if we're talking about books from just our main show, honestly, that whole final sequence where Superman is like, you know, when the world forgets everything that's happened, they're not going to remember that you were the one that saved them, Joker. And he's like, it's okay. I can live with that. I was like, what an oddly wholesome and slightly heartwarming moment for one of the worst and horrible villains in all of the DC universe.
Yeah.
I've known it the whole time.
In a weird way, it was like, it kind of reminded me, I don't know if either of you guys have read Axis, the Marvel event. It's not very good.
Yeah, no.
But there's a moment because like all the villains get, well, some of the villains get their personalities flipped, and Carnage is one of them and basically becomes like a Spider-Man-esque hero. And like, there's a moment right before the last, oh my God. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I didn't read too much about Carnage. I just, was in the Axis main series, but it was so fucking weird.
It was so bizarre. But like literally at the end, he's like, I want you to like build a statue of me and I want the people to know what I did during, I got to find the moment. hilarious. And they do. Yeah. And they literally build the statue of Carnage.
Yeah.
That's fucking wild.
That was also the period where Tony Stark was also flipped and turned into supposedly a bad guy, an evil genius. And basically, one of his acts of evil genius was curing Daredevil's blindness.
Which is so fucked up.
This is really, really fucking weird.
Yeah. Right?
Like, on one hand, he can see that, but on the other hand, he doesn't have his powers. So it's. But the thing is, it was temporary. It's just as far as evil plans go, it's kind of weak sauce. I'm gonna be honest. That was such a weird run. I think Tom Taylor wrote that too.
Was it?
Yeah.
I remember Kieran Gillen. I can't remember.
In Iron Man?
Yeah, for the like evil Tony Stark.
Yeah.
I do not remember.
My honor made out of gold and jewels and rhinestones. Oh my God. Draped in the Confederate flag. Holy shit. I want Freebird playing around the clock.
I have a weird relationship with Axis because, on the one hand, it's not a very good book, but damn, it had some funny moments.
Yeah. That was fucking weird. Well, that's our show. We leave you with that epic thought bubble.
All right.
Yeah. Remember Marvel Axis? Me neither. Yeah. So now I'm just trying to remember all the characters that got flipped. I know Sabretooth was one of them.
Yeah, Sabretooth, Enchantress. Oh,
really?
I'm trying to remember some of the other ones, but
I don't remember that. I know there was maybe one or two other heroes, but I don't remember who. Doctor Doom. Unless
maybe? Yeah, I don't remember.
Because there was that period where he was, I think he took over Superior Iron Man and he became Iron Man.
Yeah.
Which was also weird.
I think that was after, why do I keep thinking of other events?
Secret War. He came back and his face was cured because Reed is a dick. Yeah. Well, it happens. All right. So, yeah, that's our show.
It is, but I'm going to let the people leave with a different final thought. Earlier today, Kirk and I in Discord were talking about the Blob. Rob had brought it up, but Kirk and I were talking about the Blob, and Rob decided that the best comment to make was wasp juices. That's your Canadian, folks.
Oh, that was so gross. No, you know what I was referencing, right?
Yeah, the Blob eating her.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, it's one of the nastiest panels in all of comics.
Yeah.
Don't you agree?
Yes.
I mean, the
I know Brandon does.
it is fucking gnarly, man.
I mean, okay, we're talking about this panel. I see Brandon upload a screenshot. Like, what? Mm-hmm. What am I about to click on? No, I know I've shared that panel enough times.
this is just the sculpture, the aforementioned sculpture that he promised.
Right.
Wow, he actually did it.
Yeah, he actually did it.
He sure shit did.
That's hilarious.
Okay, Rob. It's all over with.
All right.
Show's done.
It's done.
Goodbye.
Thank you for coming. Peace. All right. Now that's our show. Thank you for joining us. It's been fun. We're gonna go record the bonus show, so be sure to subscribe to our Discord and check it out. Because I'm gonna be gabbing about Green Lantern, that's for damn sure. I've got a lot to say.
Wow.
So we're getting out of here, so you have to as well. Remember, in the Geek Matrix, everybody has a home. In the Yeet Matrix, you are not alone.
In the Yeet Matrix.
Yeet.
Yeah, that's now a wrestling reference, Brandon.
We don't endorse Yeet on this show. Thank you.